Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of AV Insider as host. Already starting off wrong. As always, I'm your host, not as host as always. I'm your host, Johnny Mutta. That's the name that you're listening to of me. Words are not my friend today, so let's just get past me. Because the show is never about me. Again, the show AV Insider can be found at raypubs.com, sponsored by Tascam. And of course, we have a special guest who has been on the show in the past. But it's been a while, and I've wanted to learn more, get updated, and see where things are going. And today we've decided to bring back Utzbawin, who is the CEO of Plum. Is it Plum Life or Plum?
Plum
of Plum. And at the time, I think we had you back in 2014, March. So you might have just rebranded back then, possibly. I don't recall. It might have been right after Acedia back then, a couple years back. I don't know, but but that was around the time you sort of rebranded and some things had gone on, but so much has changed, and I see you all over, you know, doing different things and kind of being this kind of cool startup in Austin, Texas, a very cool scene for startups. What I gather, there's a large pool of talent there, and I think we kind of talked about that in the past, so we don't necessarily need to talk about that, but what I would love to do is if you could kind of maybe just give us a quick update on what's kind of happened since 2014. So 4 years of everyday ins and outs of the company within 10 minutes, ready, go. Just kidding. No, but seriously, what's been going on?
Well, the thrill and agony of hardware, this is a startup story. It is really almost indescribable unless you have gone through it, right? To develop a consumer product, to fund its development, to try to gain the traction and the trust of consumers today. It has been such a roller coaster ride. Of course, I'm the first one to admit that I would do it all over again, but it's really fascinating how you experience the highs and lows in such a short period of time. Even in a single day, you can feel like you're on the top of the world. It's incredible that you can go through these swings, emotional swings, being a startup founder, particularly in a technology company, even within a single day, where one moment you feel like you're on top of the world and there's nothing stopping you. And moments later, you can feel utter despair.
Yeah.
That is the nature of a startup, but I can tell you it's exponentially greater when it's a technology startup, and you can multiply that by tenfold if it's a hardware startup to boot.
And so for the listeners who maybe haven't been listening since 2014 and prior to that, and can you give us a quick little recap about the company, right? What exactly is Plum and what is it that you offer? Again, for people that want the full detail of what the company is, go back to listen to episode 18. But if you could, that's just kind of give us a quick little elevator pitch on who your company is and what you do.
Yeah, certainly. Well, obviously the high level is that we make a consumer, you know, Internet of Things device, a connected home product.
Yeah.
It's called Plum LightPad. It simply replaces your existing light switch and allows you to control your lights when you're at home or away. It does so much more than that. You know, at a very high level, it's very similar to other connected home products like a Nest thermostat or a Sonos music system, but it's applying to one of the, you know, largest and fastest growing categories in the connected home space, which is lighting control.
Okay. And back then in 2014, at the time, like you mentioned, the light pad was, I think, your flagship device, and, you know, in and itself is a processor or a repeater, a smart dimmer switch with the capability of having more control than just the lights. I believe you talked about back then possibly even controlling your music, whether that be Sonos, adding gesture controls for scenes and other possibly IoT devices, Internet of Things, or other smart things in the network to be used from your light pad as the control module. Is that correct?
That is. And if I may, I guess what I can do is spout off a little bit of the, you know, the madness to our method.
Yeah, please.
When we started the company, it was certainly not simply to make another Appcessory, right? An app-controlled endpoint device.
I see what you did there.
A nice. Growing sandbox of connected things that you can control from your smartphone.
Yeah.
As you know, I was an integrator for, you know, a couple of decades and CEO of Cydia. And the vantage point, I think, that we as a company had, you know, was unique as it relates to the industry's trajectory. And we really set out to go where the puck was heading and not where it is today. In other words, the strategy behind Plum, or our vision, was really predicated or based on a few key assumptions. And the first is that the future of the connected home is really all about context, not simply interoperability or connectivity. But when devices begin to have a better understanding, when we can write algorithms that learn based on behavior, interaction, preferences, environment, then we can begin to predict a user's intent. And that's something that Connected Home has really never been able to do in the past. We've been dependent on, you know, RTOS software, you know, a while loop that just does things based on inputs that are predicated or based off of a user's interaction with the technology. The second prediction is that Moore's Law will continue to drive to the edge, right? Endpoint devices will continue to get smarter by way of processing power, storage, and capabilities. Our light switch just so happens to have five processors on board.
Wow.
Each light switch, each light pad has a 450 megahertz ARM9 processor. It's a full Linux machine sitting in your wall. And in fact, the same horsepower that was found in the iPhone 3 and 4S, or the 4.
Hmm.
And they're meshed in software as well, right? So we are dealing really with cumulative processing and cumulative storage. In fact, each light pad also has 4 gigs of onboard storage. And so what we believe that once endpoint devices have more horsepower and processing capability, that it will naturally begin to distribute the internet in ways that is not being done today, right? Each one of these is a data center. We have the ability to share connectivity, right? The radio, we have the ability to share processing power, idle processing horsepower,
mm-hmm.
and even storage. And when you start to amass a great number of endpoint devices, be it our light pad or a plethora of, you know, disparate devices, you can start to see a great change happening. And with that being distributed, right, we can do things that other companies can't. We're not dependent on our hardware. In fact, because of the horsepower that our product has, we can take advantage of any new integrations or interoperability. We can take advantage of new innovations or trends in technology. And we can update the entire image of our device over the air with no interruption to the light pad. And this means that we can learn from our customers how they interact with it, how they're using it, where it's being used. And we can add features and benefits over time through software without the need to sell them version 2.0 of a light switch.
So I didn't catch if you said it already. I know that the processor in there, and that, like you said, you know, the idea is that these devices should be able to learn, store, and then I would imagine at some point be able to make smarter decisions based on that knowledge. And while all the light pads themselves all have these processors, is this something that they're kind of like collecting data on now in terms of whether that's functions or day-to-day sequences or anything at all?
Yes, that first premonition or prediction, right, of context being the future of the Internet of Things, and particularly the connected home.
Mm-hmm.
I like to consider that knowledge or that those analytics as really last mile analytics.
Okay.
What happens behind the firewall has really never been collected, analyzed, or applied, has had any analytics applied to it. I look back at my years of being an integrator, back in the days that I was installing AMX systems or Crestron systems.
Mm-hmm.
Many times we had connectivity, even if it was a dial-up 9600 baud modem. Dust came out of my mouth as I said that, I know, but dating myself. But
it's like calling Blockbuster Video for Adam's Family Values 2.
That's right. But even back then, as an integrator, I had the capability of collecting data that would have been extremely valuable throughout the course of my business as an integrator, right? To
understand
when people are interacting with certain things and how they're interacting, even if it was just capturing button presses on a touch panel. But today it's much different, right? If you have an understanding of the environment, temperature, ambient light, obviously time of day, occupancy, you can begin to tie things together and infer behavior or even prove out behavior. I'll give you one example, a very simple example with the plumb light pad. It has an occupancy sensor, and currently it's being used just to light up the glow ring, right? So some magic occurs as you walk up to it. You can easily find it in the dark. It has a tri-colored LED glow ring around the Decora paddle. And it can be any color you want. You can make it a night light, et cetera. But understanding occupancy in each room and how people are moving around and behaving in the home, you can begin to also look for patterns or disruptions to patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's using that type of information that can provide greater value back to the consumer and ultimately add value to the company as a whole, because you can make data-driven design decisions. One good example is that the light pad can be used as either a switch or a dimmer, and it's set up in software. So we found that 75% of our customers use the light pad as a dimmer, but that means 25% purchased it to be used as a switch. But when we drill in deeper, we can see that the vast majority of those set up in switch are named fan, ceiling fan, or bathroom fan.
Yeah, but some sort of motor.
Understanding, exactly. We can perhaps make design decisions on product development. Should we have a fan speed controller? And once we have a better understanding of when people are using those fans, time of day, how much energy they're using, where they are geographically, you could see how having that type of information helps in many ways beyond just product development.
So is this information accessible to the end user, or the consumer, or whoever is installing these?
Well, certainly some of it is, right? We're, I believe, one of the only, if not the only, light dimmer that has sub-metering built into it.
Right.
And so we present energy usage back to the consumer in real time. And, we can present data over time to let them know how much money they're spending or how much they could save.
Yeah.
Well, we understand what the load is, so we can infer if it's an incandescent load. If I see that you have a dining room that's running 400 watts, I can infer that that's likely an incandescent load. And we can communicate with you, making suggestions that if you change those light bulbs out to, an energy efficient, dimmable LED light bulb, this is how much you can save over a period of time. So that is a direct benefit back to the consumer, and it can actually change behavior.
So being that they're software based and they have, a processor and they can store this data, and you can certainly see all the data and analytics and push, I would assume, updates to the light pads and the app, I would imagine, to each user. In the future, once this kind of information becomes more legible, makes more sense to the everyday user, because like you said, 25% of your users bought it for a switch. I mean, that's an expensive switch, right? But when you have that kind of information at your fingertips, to be able to go back in and say, this could be used for X, or, now it's a dimmer, and like you said, you got 400 watts, most likely incandescents, but not necessarily. I work with a lot of electrical contractors that want to just dump as much electrical or magnetic low voltage LED watts on a dimmer and figure it's still fine and not worry about inrush current because maybe they're unaware of it and just really overload these dimmers, right? But if you were able to tell the person in control, You know, you're getting dangerously close to like the 80% threshold of this dimmer, or just different things. Like you said, patterns and time of day. I think the other thing you just mentioned is that there's a sensor built into each one of these light pads, correct? An aux sensor?
There are multiple sensors.
Multiple sensors. So with that kind of stuff, to give that information in the app, maybe I don't know if that would be maybe more of like a pro side function versus the consumer, but I think, you know, as time progresses, more and more consumers, by let's say 2020, at least in California, when everything's supposed to be net zero energy and homes being built, your light pad, I could see being at the forefront of a new technology wave in homes being as a standard. You know, we're not necessarily going to get a control systems or certain things, but the fact that your light pad has these processors, these sensors, the abilities for visual aid, the color LED ring, the multi-touch capacity, and the fact that it can control other things aside just lighting is far surpassing what is on the market today, especially at the price range alone. I think that kind of information would be very crucial to the homeowner, right? Eventually when they're able to kind of understand it all, whether or not you allow them to have this all information all at once or little bits and pieces through maybe software updates, you know, a new feature, you know, called analytics or something like that, right? You know, like you said, how much power do they save, or the what's going on in the home? You know, we talk about other control systems where you can kind of mimic certain things throughout the home. So with these sensors, once you analyze all this data, it would be really cool, and maybe you have it already, I don't know, it would be cool to set these types of modes within your control system, right? Like you want to go away for the weekend and you want to mimic everything I did for the last week in the home, so intruders or potential intruders see that there's movement with lighting and things like that, even though there's no one really home, right? Maybe set your lighting at a certain percentage while you're quote-unquote.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and I could take you one further. There are a couple of things that I heard you say there that I believe are quite relevant, both to the, we'll talk first about the consumer,
okay,
right, benefits, and then also to the integrator, because you brought that up as well, right, opening up additional features. And that's exactly why we developed this thing the way we did, right? I was an integrator. I knew what the benefits and features were for professional installed lighting control systems, but I also experienced firsthand some of the limitations.
Great.
From a consumer standpoint, you know, some of the benefits of having a fully updatable, we'll say a more advanced piece of hardware in the home is exactly for that reason, right? To continuously increase the value of the product. So having the additional sensors, some of them we don't even use today, right? We've got an ambient light sensor on board. We're not really collecting and aggregating and using that data. I have an accelerometer on board. And you ask, well, why the heck would you want an accelerometer on a stationary device? But think about what I can do in software just with an over-the-air update. I've got an occupancy detector that has some sensitivity adjustments, right? You can set it to be less sensitive and only pick you up when you approach the switch to light up the glow ring. But using a geofence, we can have the motion detector look deeper into the room. So when you leave your home, the motion detector now, because of its prolific nature, right, you've got one in every room, becomes a security device. And every home has a light switch at their front door. And with an accelerometer, we, in the lab, successfully detect a knock at the front door or forced entry. Yeah. So just updating the software, I can offer my customers 6 months from now, a year from now, a standalone security product, right? Or I can offer that to an integrator to then incorporate into his offerings.
Yeah.
We also have a Bluetooth radio on our device. We originally used that to pass credentials over a back channel to make it very easy to provision. But using a Bluetooth, we have the ability to act as a beacon, because you've got multiple devices in your home and we can triangulate position. So if you think about it now, we not only understand occupancy, but identity. If you've got your phone in your pocket and you walk into a room, we understand who you are.
Right.
And with using a wearable, there's even offerings such as aging in place, right? If I put a Fitbit on my aging mother's wrist, she gets out of bed in the middle of the night and doesn't go back to bed, I or another loved one can be notified of that break in the pattern.
Hmm.
But if you now take a look at it from the standpoint of an integrator, because it's software-based, it's very easy for us to provide a consumer-facing solution, right? Some of the features, obviously the features that the product has now, and maybe some advanced features to provide directly to a consumer. But through software, we can offer an entirely different SKU or product to the integration channel, unlocking a slew of capabilities. One, I can't think of too many products on the market today that can inform you of the Wi-Fi signal strength of every room in the home. But we understand what the RSSI is in the bathroom versus the kitchen versus the study. We have an understanding of what Wi-Fi radios we're connected to, the make and model of the access point, the make and model of the router, how many access points, and what our device is connected to in real time. So we have data that we can see a particular light pad with an RSSI of, say, minus 30, then suddenly drops to a minus 75 and stays there for a period of time and then increases back up to a minus 30. We can notify, right? The light pad can notify the integrator that there is an issue with the network, provide a heat map of the Wi-Fi performance around the house, allow them to reboot an individual device or even tunnel into other things using our product as a gateway.
Interesting.
And the list goes on.
So out of curiosity, have you had integrators or consumers or anyone in general ask you for these kinds of things? Because it really sounds like, I mean, being that it's software-based, one already is far ahead of what products we've seen on the market. If we're just comparing as a lighting control solution, which is as far beyond. Have people asked you for these other added features, you know, for the future?
Well, certainly. You know, when we, even as far back as our Kickstarter campaign, we created a Kickstarter advisory board, right? Some of our most vocal and active Kickstarters, and got their feedback on what type of features and even down to some of the hardware, right? Asking them what type of sensors would you like to see on a product like this? And even to this day, we get suggestions, feature ideas from customers and integrators alike. One example, for instance, is the occupancy detector today is only used for the glow ring, right? To activate the glow ring.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly turn the load on, right? Upon
right.
motion. Yeah. We specifically did not launch that feature to the public because we believe that today user experience is everything.
Right.
And the last thing we want are false positives. If a consumer is sitting in their family room watching a movie and they reach for their soda or their glass of wine, that the lights turn on. That would be a user experience fail. And so we wanted to be very careful how we rolled out some of these additional features.
Yeah.
Our multi-touch is no different, right? We are recognizing every alphanumeric character, and it would be very easy for us to turn that on and allow a consumer to program it or an integrator to program in advanced gestures. And we're doing things like that in the lab. We, for instance, just completed a Control 4 driver integration with the SDDP auto discovery running on our firmware.
Mm-hmm.
But the Control 4 integrator would be able to have their customer walk up to a light pad and swipe to the left to create a different action, right? To activate any type of scene or input on a Control 4 system.
Wow.
We haven't released advanced gestures to the consumer as well because we know that those gestures are somewhat of a learned behavior and we don't want to create any confusion, right? It has to be a logical, systematic approach to providing consumers with the ultimate flexibility because our touchpad is essentially a blank canvas, right? You can do anything
right.
You want. Slide up for raise or touch the top half for raise and the bottom half for lower. So we're just methodical about how we approach those types of integrations and features.
And so as those start to make more sense, whatever those gestures or controls are, do you think that they will slowly become new updates as a standard because, you know, they've been tested and more, I would just think, assume the integrator has put them out there and they've become more common while whatever time frame this becomes, and then there might be an update, a new feature, and the whole time they've been able to do this, but it was more of does it make sense as a feature or not?
Well, certainly for the consumer, I would agree, right? Yeah. We want to be very careful, methodical about rolling out features that don't cause any frustration or confusion.
Sure.
With the integrator, because they are largely responsible for the user, the overall user experience in the home and with these other systems, the power of the light pad gives them a tremendous amount of flexibility, right? It's not just an endpoint device that allows them to control a lighting load, but it is also an input device, right, that lets them control other things through gestures or conditions. And it is also a prolific sensor device, right? If you think you've got ambient light, accelerometer, motion, Wi-Fi signal strength, and the gestures spread out through the home, you can begin doing some pretty cool stuff.
I mean, just for the sensors alone in one of your light pads, for some of those things, I couldn't even buy for the $100 price tag in a sensor.
Yeah. Well, and we know ultimately the cost can come down, but how many light switches do you know have a 450 megahertz R9, right?
And I'm sorry. That's what I meant, though, is that some of those sensors out there I couldn't even buy for the price of what you're getting in your light pad, right? And there's a few of those sensors plus the capabilities plus the processor plus the software based updates and what happens in the future and what, you know, other plans may come from this light pad, which is, I almost want to rename it something beyond the light pad because it's beyond lighting. I mean, right now it started with lighting, but there's so much more to it.
Well, it can act as a gateway, right? It can be the hub.
Right.
Because each individual light pad has the processing power to do what most low cost hubs are able to do. In fact, I'd argue in many cases, a central controller from a number of home automation companies. But, and if you think about as a standalone system, its capabilities of expanding just through something like IFT, it's a good example for a consumer. They don't have to buy any hubs, any gateways. You can buy one light pad or you can buy 100. There's one SKU. You don't have to think about masters and slaves. You just count up the switches you want to replace. But then when you start to integrate simple things like IFT or Alexa, you start getting some pretty cool features very quickly. You can walk into your kitchen, for instance, and set a timer on your Alexa if you start baking cookies, right? You forget that you've done that. You walk out of the room. But all of our glow rings can be used for notification. So when the Alexa timer goes off through IFT, we can have all of the light pads in the house flash blue to indicate the timer went off. Or if there is a severe weather alert in your county, we can have all of the light pads flashing red to indicate there's an emergency. Or in the case of an integration with a security product, when your house fills with smoke, you certainly don't want a lot of lights on. It's like driving in the fog with your high beams. We can have the light pads, you know, dim all the lights, but create an egress path using the glow rings. Red indicates don't go this way. There's not a door in this direction. And green would indicate this is the direction you want to travel to get to.
Yeah, I love that service. And just to go back to that IFT or IFTTT, for people who are unaware of what that acronym means, it's a service that means if this, then that. And that's basically what it is. If you do this, then this happens. And there's a multitude of applets or what do they call them? Recipes that you can build and create with basically design around the internet or the internet of things. And your company Plum is now a part of that. Well, they probably have been for a while. Like I said, it's been 4 years and I forgot about everything. But
what's cool about the light pad is that, you know, as an action, right, IFT has two sides. The if this is the truth, and the then that is the action. But the light pad is actually two actions in one, right?
Okay.
Control the light, but you can also control the glow ring. So at night before you go to bed, you can tell Alexa or, you know, using some other input, time-based or whatever, that it's nighttime and all the glow rings can dim. You can have the glow ring in your kid's room turn on to white at 40% as a nightlight and have it run for 8 hours, et cetera. So that's pretty cool that we've got two actions in one, but we're also currently working on the trigger side. So through IFT, you would be able to use things like, you know, if my Wi-Fi signal strength gets below X, you know, reboot my router, or if I swipe left, you know, open the garage door if you've got some integration through IFT with other devices.
Cool, and that's all through a partnership with Plum and IFT, correct?
Correct.
And at the time, back then, so voice control was not a huge thing, nor was really thought of to my knowledge. But now, obviously, you have IFT, which is a partner with that. But Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant, whether that's through your phone, computer, tablet, Chrome, your home devices, whatever that may be, those are all now a part of a command that can be done verbally, as long as you're set up that way and you can do that. Now, what about the ever-loving Apple fans who like HomeKit? Is that something that may be on the roadmap?
Yeah, your Apple HomeKit lovers that also know about Plum, even back in the early days as Yubi, are all sitting at the edge of their seat. We we comprehended HomeKit even back in the Kickstarter days. We knew that we had to support it. We can, and we are. In fact, we have a HomeKit integration in development. We've been testing it.
Okay.
It is near completion. Every dimmer that we've shipped has the HomeKit chip on it.
Yeah.
And we'll be providing it. We know that, you know, ultimately, we know that speech will be an inherent part of our lives, right? There's no questioning it.
Right.
When we started the company, we also had a very strong belief that when you're at home, you do not want to pull your smartphone out to control your lights when you walk in and out of your kitchen.
Not if you don't have to.
That's right. And we also know that speech will not be the only interface. You're not going to walk into your nursery in the middle of the night and command Alexa, Google, or Siri to turn lights on. The light switch has been used by humans now for over 100 years, right? It's a natural, instinctive way to interact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we incorporated the multi-touch into the device, so you could quickly control a single light, a group of lights, or all of your lights from any location. And preset levels, right? Preset intensities, fade times, et cetera. We wanted to make it as flexible as possible. And that's additional data that we've accumulated and confirmed our assumption, because 86% of all interactions with Plum are physical at the switch itself. And then the additional 14%, 14% is through other means, like integrations with IFT, Google Home, et cetera. And we know that number will go up, obviously, but it was interesting to see how much people still want to interact with their light switches.
I'm really excited to see where your company goes. I mean, from day one, you were already doing things different. I think that was the biggest appeal about your company to me, is that you aren't just another lighting control system. It's beyond lighting control, and it's beyond the method of how it's being controlled. And the fact that each one itself is its own processor, repeater, it's got several sensors. It's got gesture control, which kind of blew my mind at the time. I'm like, yes, this is a company that's thinking for the future. And then beyond that, the fact that you can store this data, you can learn from this data, and then eventually update the software and launch new features. And the whole time, this is just something that's sitting in this product. The fact that you're talking about security, the fact that you're talking about working with the integration community and the consumer as well, but I think more so a pro version would probably be something nicer for the integrators, but just depends on what features go to whom. And just the concept of the light pad itself, I think, has exploded in the last several years. Again, from day one, it was already something that's just so different than what we've been used to in terms of a lighting control unit and also system, because it was already wanting to be so much more than just lighting control. The fact that you can integrate with other things and you're writing stuff for, like you said, your HomeKit, things like that. And I just think that your company is so well thought of what the future is and is going to be, that you put it in your product from day one. That alone, I think, is just something that people should invest in. And if they don't understand that, when they say, oh, it's a $100 switch, right? I'm like, no, it's not just a switch. And, you know, if you're using it for just a switch, maybe we should talk about why you're using a $100 switch. Your device itself is just something, it's a smart device for homes of the future, but available today.
That's a good way to put it. I mean, we, again, you know, we set out really focused on our architecture and the software. We chose the light switch because of its prolific nature, right? Mm-hmm. It's in every room. Yeah. It is the oldest technology in the home. It's the most used. It has a proven value proposition, right? Lighting control companies have been around for 20 plus years, 25 years or more, and they have served the estate market. But those systems are quite costly, and when you start to try to bring that down to a broader market, we believe that if we build a best-in-class product that delivers all of the features and benefits of a traditional professionally installed lighting control system and more, we could put a dent into it. And again, the light switch was just the obvious place to put our technology because of its growth potential, right? Lighting is the number one most requested subsystem in the connected home today. Mm-hmm. It has a very high attachment rate among the integration market. You know, 90% or more of the homes that they're in an integrator is working on has lighting control. So a product like ours gives them the ability to expand to a broader audience, do things faster, do more. Things like energy metering and the data, having network monitoring and security sensors, et cetera, in there. We haven't even touched on things like the storage, right? Having 4 gigs of onboard storage today, we're moving to an 8 gig and then 16 gig. In our lab, we're playing around with 512 gig storage SD cards.
Wow. So
I think you've got two light pads, you've got a terabyte of storage that's accessible to the consumer. Right. If you've got 20, 30, 100 light pads spread out through your home, you've got a private cloud. You've got idle processing power that can be used to run applications in the background that have nothing to do with lighting or connected home for that matter. It is all about how we will live in our homes in the future and how we expect to interact with the technologies in our lives and what we expect them to do for us.
Well, you're definitely changing the way where people live and interact with their homes. And I really hope that this starts to expand, and I'm sure you're already thinking about it, into the commercial spaces. I would love to see this in a larger commercial application. Obviously, you're changing the way we do in homes, but I would love to see you sort of shake up the commercial space. I feel like there's a lot that's everyone's sort of like, you know, me too, in a wireless. I'm like, eh, but... What makes you better? You know what I mean? Like we need more products like this available to a larger majority of population.
Well, if you think about, you know, the obvious start for us was in the residential space. That's my background.
Yeah, sure. That's in
blood. We know that customer, we know those systems, we know the integrators and the market. Mm-hmm. But I also do understand the commercial market. You know, it was tied very closely to the AVIXA channel, the Infocom market, and the commercial integrators as well. And in the commercial market, right, in an office building, lighting is the number one spend for energy usage, right? It's about 30% of the bill. And having a device that provides real-time energy feedback and demand response capabilities, you can actually monetize what that savings is pretty quickly. And the cool thing about the product, again, because of its modular nature and its software-based design, it could very easily be adapted to different types of technologies. If it's a PoE lighting system, a version of our light pad that does not have a dimmer built into it, but a PoE or Ethernet-based sensor and user interface that is spread out throughout the facility, mm-hmm. and control those PoE lighting systems. In fact, one thing that's really interesting, it's really based more on the residential side, but you know, there's been a lot of discussion around smart light bulbs, Philips Hue, Lifex, and the ton of others that have emerged. And the reason consumers like them is that it has low friction, right? You can quickly and easily install them. There's no screwdriver required.
Sure.
But you and I both know the problem with most smart light bulbs is the duct tape problem that the industry refers to it as. Kill the switch and you kill power to the radio and the microcontroller. So you might have the app on your phone as you navigate through your home and turn your Philips Hue light bulbs on and off. But you're visiting mother-in-law, right? Guests, teenage kids, they may not, and they're going to turn the switch off. And Plum has the ability to control, this is not a live feature today, but we've for instance, filed IP around this, and we can control smart light bulbs natively, directly from the light pad, not only turning the smart light bulb like a Philips Hue or a Lifex on and off, but we can also raise and lower the intensity and even change the color of the light bulb directly from the light pad without interrupting power to the smart light bulb.
That's awesome. And Lisa, that's something you filed for a patent on right now?
Yes. Yeah. Native control of smart light bulbs.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, like you mentioned, yeah, you tape off the switch and hope that no one tries to run power to it or dim the bulb even worse.
That's right. So we complement smart light bulbs, giving you the ability to not only, you know, dim the light, but also change the white balance if it's a white, you know, a standard LED. And if it's an RGB LED, you can not only change the color, but we can even match the glow ring on our light pad to the color of the light bulb, which is a cool feature.
Very cool and very handy. Again, thinking for the future, thinking for products that we have today, but no way to control them. I think, again, the light pad, which I almost want to come up with a better name, like the everything pad, just because it does more than lighting. Not that it's a bad name, but it just because it's so more advanced than lighting, and again, nothing bad about this product at all. All good things. Every time I see this, I just think, I'm like, what are you going to add next? Right? Because there's got so much power in each one of these things. And like, well, we could do that. We haven't done it yet, but we could do this. And we're thinking about that. We're collecting data to try this. And, you know, as it makes more sense, you know, we'll launch this, right? We'll do this, we'll do that. And it feels like you still haven't even really scratched the surface of everything that it's capable of doing that lives inside each one of these pads.
I agree. Right. If the architecture, the circuit design, the horsepower that's inside of a very small package, you know, obviously you can imagine this, the circuit board or what we call our main board can easily be repurposed into a multitude of different embodiments, right? It could be any device, from an electrical outlet to a thermostat to a garage door opener, whatever you can think of. But to be honest, I mean, we're still a young company, right? Most importantly is that we have a device, you know, right now that is receiving great reviews on websites like Amazon. You know, people comparing it to, you know, they love it better than Nest, or I would have expected this coming from Apple. And we're focused right now on customer relation, right? A great user experience to change people's expectation of what a product should do, how it should be built, and what it should provide them. And second, to prove our assumptions. And that is through, you know, validation of those assumptions via that data, right? And collecting 20 million unique data points per day is so that we know that we got it right and we can make the changes necessary, either a fix or an improvement or an enhancement through software, without having to ask people to replace their product.
I don't know if I would have expected Apple to have created something like this. However, I would expect them to throw you an offer to buy the company, if not them, Google, and obviously Amazon, with the way that these companies are going. And you may or may not, they may have not already happened. And even 4 years ago, I'm surprised someone back then didn't try to buy your company purely for the technology and rebrand it as theirs.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they're listening and or you know them, you tell them my number.
I will. I know a few of them there. They still won't hire me. I'm just kidding.
We have a very passionate team, right, that knows this space. We know what we've developed. We wanna see it. We wanna see it through.
Yeah.
Well, right now, the most important thing to us is, you know, every single customer is important to us. We're trying to create customers that create customers, not a product.
Well, I appreciate your time and thank you for sharing everything that's happened in the last 4 years. Well, or all that you can share at least. And as things progress farther, there's new updates, Apple buys you, whomever, and you want to just talk more about the state of the industry, your product, what you are planning to do with the home, commercial spaces, and beyond, I'd love to have you back and talk more.
Well, Johnny, you've known me long enough to know if you want to talk about the industry, to bring a sack lunch, because it'll take us a while.
We'll have to do it in several installments.
Yeah, it'll be hard to get me to shut up.
And you're welcome back. So for people that are unfamiliar with the company and they want to learn more, to either one, buy your product, two, reach out, and or they just want to learn about your company, what's the best place to go and learn more?
Well, our URL is simply plumlife.com.
Okay.
plumlife.com. You could send me a message directly to my Twitter at Utz Baldwin.
Cool.
Or they can reach out to you and you can get them my contact information as well.
Sounds good. And if you're more of a social person like myself, you could check them out on Facebook. It's simply at Plum Life. No, I apologize. It's facebook.com/plumlife1. On Twitter, you can also reach them there at GetPlum. And then they're on LinkedIn. Check them out. So linkedin.com/company/361-4314. Or just Google LinkedIn Plum. And you can check out all the information there. Or again, you can just reach out to me. I'll connect you with us, and we'll figure it out. My personal email is johnny@ravepubs.com. That's johnny@ravepubs.com. At jmoto3 pretty much sums up the internet for me everywhere except for Snapchat, because that person's an imposter. You can find not my evil twin, but me at av_insider there, and we'll say hi and we'll talk about stuff. Again, thank you so much for sharing your time, your knowledge, and your brilliant invention to the masses. And as we progress farther and you are more able to talk about some of those inventions that I know and integrations that are happening, I'd love to have you back.
Love to be there. Johnny, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you. Everyone, this has been AV Insider. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you on the